What's up, world? Welcome back to KameCast. My name is Cody Taylor, and as always, my co-host, Doug Keeney.
Season one, bitches!
Yes, sir. We are so excited to release season one to you. We have a lot in store that we're going to be talking about. You want to give them a little bit of an idea of what they are in store for, bud?
Well, if you listen to the teaser, then you already heard the announcement. But this season, we are focusing on all things Dragon Ball Z. We're going to have arc breakdowns. We're going to talk about our favorite characters, our favorite moments. We're going to talk about some movies, going to talk about some games, and, you know, maybe a couple other surprises along the way. But boy, oh boy, do we have a big one to start out with.
Absolutely. I am so excited for this. We had an interview opportunity that we absolutely loved being able to do.
To start things off, we figured what better way than to just drop the atomic bomb right off the bat. Cody, what do we have for him today?
We have an interview with the awesome and incredibly cool person, Masako X.
And for those of you who may not know who Masako X is, which, why are you here? I mean, I assume if you're a Dragon Ball fan, you probably have a pretty good idea who this guy is, but he is the voice of Son Goku and Son Gohan in Dragon Ball Z Abridged, the very, very widely popular YouTube parody series, which at this point has kind of taken a life of its own. It's not even, I don't think most people even look at that as a parody at this point. It's just its own interpretation of DBZ that stands, for me, it stands on its own just as good as the Funimation dub or the Ocean dub or any other version of DBZ that might be out there.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. I think, and it's even said in the interview, which I agree with, is it's its own iteration at this point. And they were able to prove that not only were they able to make extremely funny moments, but at the same time, they could have those serious, heart-wrenching, like, moving, gives you chills moments. It was very much, even though it was funny, it was a serious of its own interpretation.
Absolutely. And yeah, it was such a great time talking to him. There were so many cool things that he told us in this interview that I never even knew about. One thing that I do want to address right off the bat is once the interview starts, you guys are going to notice a dip in audio quality for Cody and myself. The reason for that is because we did this interview with Masako via Discord. And for some reason, as I was getting set up for this interview, Discord just was not working with our regular studio equipment. Don't know why. It's something I'm going to troubleshoot and try to fix for next time we have a guest that we use Discord through. But so for this interview, Cody and I went to our cell phones because there was no way we were going to not do this interview.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that I would like to address is you're probably going to hear like random points where it might sound like I cut out. I think I did a pretty good job of editing around that, but it might still pop up a little bit here and there. I don't know what was going on. That was something with Discord where it just, for some reason, every little bit would disconnect me and then reconnect me 5 seconds later. Mm-hmm. But so apart from, you know, just a slight dip in audio quality and, you know, some cutouts here and there, I think it went really smoothly. What would you say?
Overall, I was so happy with the way everything went. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to Masako. I'm so grateful and so thankful. It was literally a dream come true.
Absolutely, for both of us. I mean, if you would have told 7-year-old me that, hey, you know, almost 20 years from now, you're going to get to sit down and have a conversation with Goku.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and you'll hear in the interview when he goes into Goku at a point in the interview, and that when that happened, man, I'm not gonna lie, my inner fanboy came out, because I mean, it's Goku, man.
Absolutely.
What are you gonna do? Been watching this stuff since probably 1997, I think, is when it finally made its way over here.
I think so, yeah.
And man, just to finally be able to sit down and talk to that character, even though yes, we know it's not Sean Schemmel, we know it's not the fellow from the Ocean dub, we know that it's not those guys, but I think that Masako's interpretation of Goku is just as valid as those, and in some ways more so. It's a lot more real in a lot of ways.
He definitely carved his own path for for that. And I think it shows.
So without further ado, we're going to get into it now. You guys have been waiting long enough. It is now time for our discussion with the one and only Masako X.
What's up, world? Thanks for listening to ComicCast. As always, I'm Cody Taylor with my co-host, Doug Keeney. Doug, how you doing today, buddy?
Hey, Cody. I'm doing great. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing fantastic. So tell us, what are we in store for today?
Oh, boy. Do we have a big surprise for you guys today. We have a very special guest. You guys best know him for his work on Dragon Ball Z Abridged with Team 4 Star, as well as his YouTube channel, Masako X. We are joined by the one and only, Masako X. How are you doing today, sir?
Hello there, everyone. How are you guys doing?
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Matt.
That's all right. No worries. Yeah. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we've been trying to get this done for a little while, but finally got you on, and we couldn't be happier.
Oh, very right excited. On.
So right off the bat, man, we saw on Instagram a few weeks ago, you got a brand new puppy. How's that going?
Oh, yeah. So this is coming from a guy who has only ever owned cats and was terrified of dogs for about the good space of 15 years. Yeah, I used to live next to three German shepherds, and there was a hole in our fence. And if you looked anywhere near it, you'd be prepared to run because they basically would come for me every single time. So, yeah, but now my wife, Philly, she had bearded collies all her life. And I met her previous one who was named Tiffin. And she was, you know, I came in quite late to her pack, so she tolerated me. But now we've got a brand new puppy that she's been looking forward to. Her name is Uffa. And we've just been doing a clicker training session with her breeder. And basically, it's been like a really, really good experience, and it helps with discipline immensely.
Yeah, we actually are similarly going through the same thing. My parents just recently got another puppy, and she's absolutely terrorizing and trying to bite everything.
Oh, dear. Well, all I can say is I would recommend, if they could get a clicker and look at videos on clicker training, that can really help a good puppy focus.
I'll definitely tell them to look into that. She needs it.
That's awesome. Well, let's get right into it, man. So you being from the UK, I don't know if you guys ever got Toonami over there like we did. How did you go about discovering Dragon Ball in your youth?
Well, actually, we did get Toonami, but we got it in very different forms. Like, we had a, because our voice, we didn't have the voice of Tom. We had there's a very, very good voice actor who does a lot of stink called Red Pepper. And he basically sounds like this on Cartoon Network's Toonami. As in, like, you hear him everywhere on, like, advertising all over mainstream media. So to hear him on Toonami was really, really good. But we had it as a segment for Dragon Ball Z in the year 2000. That's when we got Dragon Ball in the UK. And then by the time it ended in 2003, Toonami actually became its own channel. Yeah, it became its own channel, but it was very, very weird. It had, like, very childlike mascots. We didn't have Tom or anything like that. It just got very strange. And then in 2006, it just suddenly disappeared. So unfortunately, we kind of missed out on that. But we did have an experience of Toonami in the UK. It was just very different to the way it is in the US.
I would say so, man. Just hearing that you guys didn't have Tom, I couldn't even imagine Toonami without Tom.
We did have Tom of sorts, but it was mainly just a character rather than the announcer. But we had something, an alternative called CNX. And it was like really hardcore, like action adventure anime movies. Dragon Ball Z would be part of it, and it was really, really cool. Like you get to see like some really cool stuff. You get Project Aiko and Appleseed at night, and you think, right on, that's awesome. That's like really cool 90s mech anime. That's great. But that didn't last long. Any attempt to put any kind of anime channel on in the UK, it usually fizzles out in about 6 months.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, no, unfortunately, it's only in the last couple of years where it's actually become somewhat noticeable. Because, you know, going to Leicester Square to watch the Dragon Ball Super Broly movie premiere, that was a big deal. That was pretty cool to see the UK premiere. But it's only recently that anime has become somewhat understood. For the longest time, people just didn't get it.
Okay. Was it kind of like stigmatized in the UK or...
Sort of. Not in necessarily a bad way. It was more presumptuous, as in, like, you know, oh, that stuff from Japan. Oh, is it giant robots? Yes, some of them are, yes. Oh, is it like girls and stuff? It's like, yeah, a little bit, but it depends. And there's like a lot of nuances to it. But, you know, there was still the old adage of like, I'm 33. So I was at the tail end of finding a fifth generation VHS tape of Urusei Yatsura and not understanding a clue what it is. But I loved it. And it just goes to show, if you want to say that you're a Rumiko Takahashi fan, don't just say you're Inuyashas or your Ranmas. Say either Maison Ikkoku or Urusei Yatsura. That's where she started.
Wow. That's awesome. So when you discovered Dragon Ball, you said around the year 2000, so I assume Funimation had already gotten a hold of it at that point. Do you have any experience with the Ocean dub?
Yeah, it was very interesting, actually, because we actually got that. We had the first 53 episodes from the Ocean dub. Like, we got those. And then suddenly at episode 54, we got the hard cut to, you know, the old Sean Schemmel of Goku. No way!
Oh, yeah.
Not him!
Yeah, man, listening back to those early seasons, I mean, it's still great for, you know, it's my nostalgia. That's what I grew up with. I love it. But yeah, going back and listening to it now after having X amount of years with Schemmel with that character, man, it is so jarring.
And then again, to hear Sabat, the old early Sabat going, loser!
Yeah.
What? It's like just the whole, Vegeta, I didn't expect you to be here too. Is that okay? Well, as a matter of fact, it isn't. Like, just all those old classics. And, you know, but incidentally, the Bulma actress for the longest time before Monica Rial, Tiffany Bulma, she's not doing so well right now, you know, what with COVID and stuff. There is actually, if you look on various DBZ actors' Twitters and stuff, you know, there is a fundraising campaign to help kind of pay for her medical expenses. So she's not doing so hot, but I think it's good to see that the community still remember her. As is with Linda Young, because I was at the first KameaCon, and to see Linda Young there, the original voice of Frieza, getting a huge, huge line, and people excited to see her, that just warmed my heart. That was like, oh, that's great. You know, everyone was being respected, and that was really good.
That's always something great to see. And I mean, how can you not with someone like Linda Young? Because I mean, rightly or wrongly, you know, she is the original voice of that character. And no matter who did it afterwards, you can never get another first.
I think what you'd like to hear, so I'd love to hear her do Frieza with uncensored dialogue. I'd like her to actually, read the original copy and, you know, go all out.
That would be amazing. Yeah, because I mean, she does so well as Genkai that, I mean, you see what she can do with an uncensored character on something like Yu Yu Hakusho. So that would have been great to see.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
So in your early days of Dragon Ball, what were the moments that kind of stuck out to you that made you go, you know what? I really like this show. I think I'm going to keep going with this.
I think it was just basically from the start, honestly, because I had a really unorthodox introduction to anime because my brother, he's about 5.5 years older than me, and he was very much, he loved anime. Like, he loved Masamune Shiro. Well, it still does, actually, but would do like Ghost in the Shell, three and Dominion Tank Police, 3x3 Eyes, Urutsuki Doji. Fortunately, he never showed me that one. Not Legend of the Overfiend, just incidentally, and Project Aiko. Project Aiko, considering somebody who was 12 and had no idea what the hell was going on, that was like, what? I'm seeing stuff that's R-rated when I'm 12. I have no idea what this is. Oh, and the Fatal Fury OVAs. Those are really cool. Because in the Fatal Fury, the movie, Legend of the Wolf, the main bad guy, Laocoon, is voiced by the same guy from Super Duma Sumo, who goes, Gluteus Maximus! Like, Matt Reeves is like, yeah, that, you know, that guy who basically always does the dude from early 2000s cartoons. Yeah, it's really fun. But Dragon Ball was like the next step because I was getting into like more
typical shows. Like, I watched Pokemon, sure, but after Johto, I kind of like this all out of that. But then it was like, say, Moon, Samurai, Pete Tassel, and Dragon Ball came on. And it was literally nothing like I'd seen. It was like, it was pretty violent and intense, like the, you know, the typical kind of like samey stuff from the 90s. But it also had that kind of action stuff, and it was censored, but I had no idea about that at the time. So I thought, oh my god, they blew up the cargo robot! But I thought, and of course, Tenshin Han going, look, I can see their parachutes. They're okay. It's like, any time that they don't, you can, I can imagine the script writers saying, oh good, they haven't got the mouth to the camera. We can put in whatever we want. But I really dug it. I just really dug it immensely. And I was I'm so appreciative of the fact that we didn't have to wait so long between like 2 or 3 years between episode 53 and episode 54. We still had to wait, but it was nowhere near as long. So when I found that out later, I was like, oh, dang. Me as an impatient kid, I wouldn't have been able to tolerate that.
Oh, man, I was in the thick of that, man, because I've been with Dragon Ball and Toonami pretty much from the day Toonami launched, and I remember the frustration of getting to that last episode and then going back to the arrival of Raditz on an endless loop for a while. That was killing me. And then when they announced, I think if I remember correctly, it started with they were going to put out the Dragon Ball Z movies and put them out as specials. And that was the first time I had seen new Dragon Ball content. And the great thing about that was they didn't censor the movies very much.
No, I mean, the world's strongest, Peter Kalamas' performance in that is incredible.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, just kind of can't bang. And it's just like, you know, that nice. Very, very good. Again, the old actors, if you gave them that, you know, uncensored script, you could really get to see them properly do what they could. So that is really, really special.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It definitely gave them more freedom to actually dive into that character and try and really become them.
Yeah, yeah.
So take me back, sir, to the very early days of the abridging scene, because you have pretty much been there from the beginning. How would you say that scene has changed from the time that you first got involved to now?
Well, I would probably say that at the beginning, because with Vegeta 3986, we used to be part of the Voice Acting Alliance, and that was like a message board for people who like to do fan dubs online. And a lot of the people who are now in the main voice acting business today started there. They cut their teeth there. So you get a lot of talent there. But he and I, we did a fan dub of Chibi Vampire Cubby. That anime I really, really liked. And we did the fan dub of an episode, which was really, really good. And we then decided to do a blooper special. And we just came up with stuff. We improvised it, like pretended that we, you know, these were like outtakes. So it was like a little proto-parody. And then together we were like, hey, this actually works really well. My editing and acting with your writing, that actually works really well. So then we thought, well, yeah, he mentioned Yu-Gi-Oh! Bridge, because that had just recently started. I think Martin was on his sixth episode at the time. And we thought, well, let's try and do something like that. And we did it. We thought, well, what's a big anime? We thought Naruto. So we tried that. And I messaged Martin, and he was that. This was at the time when he was a recluse. Like, he wouldn't talk to anyone. So I was like, hey, can you do a cameo in our thing? And he went, yeah, okay. And I was like, what, sorry? I got him to talk. So that's why the episode of Naruto Bridge, hey, this is my parody. And then he added, believe it. He added that was a bit of improv. I was like, nice. And then from there, we did Naruto Bridge for a good long time. And then we saw other abridges coming, like Lani, Kaiser, Taka with their own shows. We really admired their work and we got talking to them. And then eventually, we did crossovers. I remember one time, this was also with HBI 2K, who I really look up to. He's like one of my mentors, quite frankly, because you know, his management and stuff, really, really good. And his wit, and he's the only abridger to have completed 3 series, like Escaflowne and Gantz. So he's been able to do all of that and really well too. But we all got together and did crossovers. And then eventually Kaiser thought, well, what's the anime that we all have in common that we like? Dragon Ball Z. So Lani, Vegeta, and I, and a girl called Rissa, we basically, all four of us, we did a parody of the first couple of movies, Neighborhood Club Productions. And then eventually Kaiser was like, well, why don't we we can get like the same team on the movies. And I remember Kaiser actually being really, really timid, asking me whether I'd reprise the role of Goku. But I was like, do Goku more? Okay. Yeah, sure. I was like, I didn't hesitate. So I was like, this is great. I like that. But fun fact, I didn't play Gohan originally. That wasn't actually scripted, cast for him originally.
Yeah, I actually had that down to ask you about that. How did that come about?
I have no idea, because I did voice Gohan in the two movies. There wasn't really much to do at that time, but basically, I think they tried with Vegeta to voice Gohan, but it didn't quite work out. Like, just a recasting. So I think Kaiser just asked, hey, do you mind like doing it from episode 2? So I was like, yeah, okay. And then it was pretty much that all the way up to episode 60.
What, with voicing both Goku and Gohan, what emotions and prep differences kind of went into the difference of those two voices?
Well, to begin with much less experience at the time, even though I had 3 years experience, it was still like the voices, as you can probably tell, do evolve over time. So, yeah, like Goku kind of like sounds like here, he's quite casual. But right back at the beginning, it basically sounded like Goku was doing a strong, sad impression.
It sounded kind of like you were, yeah, in those like, early days, it kind of sounded like you were being like Goku Superman a little bit.
Well, kind of, sort of, but it just made me sound like Strong Staff from Homestar Runner. I don't like food anymore. And then Gohan
was just really much just a regular kid instead of having
But basically with Goku.
Goku's just kind of this guy. He's really casual, chill. You gotta really do it with a smile. Because otherwise, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, but with Gohan.
Gohan's pretty much just like, you know, just been more casual, been more logical, knowing that my father has not got half a brain.
Just like a bit more measured with Gohan, whereas Goku, you can just roll with it. Like, so long as you say anything funny about food or beating Vegeta, that works.
So how active were you in the writing of DBZA as it started and as it went on? Or what was it, more just a voice acting thing for you?
Well, quite frankly, none. Because I was more of the voice and personality, as it were, like one of the four founding four in a way. Like, people would look up to us as a group of four, and when I say I don't have anything to do with the writing, really, people are surprised. Having said that, later on I did start to include a couple of quips, like the highway to Hiffle thing. That was mine.
That was great,
because it was just like, you know, it's like, let's go drive cars again.
Yay! I'm on the highway to Hiffle.
And then that led to Piccolo going, dodge, bitch! Get out the way. Yeah, so it just a couple of bit of improvs and stuff. And along the way, because we'd start to know the characters, the guys would be like, well, hey, what would Goku say? I'm like, maybe you could try this. And it's like, yeah, okay, let's roll with it.
Sounds like you guys have enjoyed a very good working relationship in that way. And it's cool that they give you the freedom to be able to do those little quips and those little ad-libs that you put in. Because those little ad-libs, to me, are what make characters like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because it gives the flexibility and the understanding about, yeah, the character. It just shows you're basically having faith put in you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So at what point during the production of DBZA did you guys look at each other and go, oh my gosh, we have something pretty big here?
After episode 1.
Really?
Yeah, after episode 2, by the time we got to episode 2, it's like, I think they were planning like their 50,000 subscriber special, and that happened before they finished it. It was like, oh, we're near 100. Oh, okay. And this is 2008 YouTube. Having 100,000 subscribers back then was big.
Oh yeah, that's massive for that time.
Yeah. But we kind of knew something was special right there. So, like, no, it wasn't a 50,000, it was 8,000 subscriber special, because it was like,
oh wow,
yeah, because we did the special. It's like, Nappa, the subscribe, Vegeta, what is the level of their subscriber count? And it's like,
and then the 8,000. It's like, what? Vegeta, you didn't do it right. Yes, I did, Nappa. Because it's actually meant to be 8,000. but yeah, so immediately we knew something was big, but we had no idea that we would expect it. Like, we saw it, but we didn't necessarily believe it.
And surely, and then, I'm sure you guys didn't expect that 10 years later you'd still be doing it.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, basically, it got to that point. We really, really saw the difference at Yomacon 2009. That was the first convention we were invited to as guests. And that was the first time the four of us, and Martin and Megami and White Ash, who originally paid attention, Chiaotzu. That was the first time we all met. First time met in person after 2 years of each other. Yeah, that was a pretty emotional weekend. Then watching Paranormal Activity. That was that was when it was new. And I think it was like, it got to that point where basically they had to cut our panel in two because the line for our panel went out the hotel. And we basically, like, they had no idea how to control it. So we then had the surreal moment of Angry Joe basically just going, like, you know, having to marshal the queue, marshal the line by Angry Joe. So it's like, what? How is that even a thing? that was pretty wacky. And then just like, because we got to meet all sorts of people, you know, we got to like meet the voice of Joey Wheeler, we got Angry Joe, we got Linkara, and just all these different people. And they were just like really relaxed people. And it was just that different perspective and seeing people in the flesh. And I was sick during that weekend, but at the same time, it was still really great to see all the people there really enjoying themselves and coming to see us. It's still bemusing, and it's still bemusing to this day.
So going into DBZA a bit more, do you have any standout moments from the series that you look back and go, man, I'm really proud of that?
Probably the Goku Frieza fight, because like it was like that was pretty much one of the biggest first times where I think people actually got to see that, hey, we can do the funny stuff, we can do the serious stuff too, but actually really just add some extra nuance to it, because Martin did great as Frieza, and just like going alongside with Goku, it was like, that was like the turning point I felt with my voice, because prior to like episode 29, I felt my voice wasn't really that great because I wasn't actually in a good place at the time, mentally speaking. I felt like I was a bit underachieving. This was in my mind. I felt really undervalued. But later on, that was the turning point where I was thinking, hey, cool, I've got the Goku voice down. Awesome. Because you notice that it starts to change into what you see today. And yeah, that fight was really good. Probably episode 35, actually. That was like the moment where Goku does his big Super Saiyan scream after the first time after the Namek Saga. And I just felt like, yeah, I got that. And it sounded really good. And then, of course, episode 60, part one. So for 10 years, we were building up to the Gohan Super Saiyan 2 scream. And I was bricking it. I was absolutely terrified that I was not, because it took us an hour and a half to record that scream, and I could not do it because I was recording in Dallas at the studio, and I just couldn't do it. And it was just too much pressure. But
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, but then to finally at San Japan be at that panel, the scream happens. I'm basically head on the table, like just bracing myself. And then people, you know, started clapping and applauding. And it was like, I almost cried because it was just like the relief after 10 years of buildup. And it's like, people like it. People love it.
Oh, yes.
It's one of the best parts of the entire season. Done it. Almost every time that I personally watch it, I get chilled.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. It's just so that moment, and it's just the entire Gohan thing. Like, we had no idea how to actually perform that for the longest time. It was actually when we were in the booth, like actually figuring out like
the murder of one's own child or children.
Just like basically, this is a Gohan who snapped. So you really get to see that, you know, happen as Gohan is Super Saiyan 2.
You know, as a fan watching you guys do that stuff, I can honestly say that you guys provided the definitive version of that Gohan Cell fight for me. That's my favorite moment in entirety of Dragon Ball, and I was so nervous for you guys when it got to that point, but to see you guys knock it out of the park the way you did, it was so awesome. You guys did superb on that.
Well, thank you. That's really appreciated. And I think the one thing, it surprises a lot of people, but basically it's just the whole thing, it's a two-way street. Like, that time, it's mainly between myself and Taka. So Taka has to really step up with that performance as Cell, and he did. And so you needed that, like, back and forth to really sell it. And even that moment with Goku and Piccolo, just that moment when, like, Goku goes, "I made a terrible mistake." Like, just, like, that moment of clarity was absolutely vital. And it was sold very well.
Oh, yeah, it was. So let's go on to the end of DBZA. How active in that decision were you? How did you find out about it?
I wasn't really. None of this was my decision or my choice. This is the thing. As far as I'm concerned, and it really is true, I worked as an editor and as a voice actor, so I wasn't really to do with the decision making. But it was basically just like when we recorded for episode 60, that was at the time where it was basically, we were not really sure. We were like getting tired of the constant like takedowns from Toei, and they were all automatic. So they weren't actually following it up. So it was basically a month down the drain for no reason, for no follow-up.
Sure.
So I think it was just to them, it was fatigue. Like, after a decade of this, it was like, no more. And I think, yeah, just wanting to end it on a high and not being sure what to do with Boo. But I remember, so that when we recorded that in May 2018, that was the idea. That was the idea of what we were doing. As in, like, yeah, that's it. We're finishing it. So Goku's goodbye speech, that was, when I was recording that, that was genuine emotion of like, you know, this isn't goodbye. Yeah, it's more like, see you later. It's just that there was a lot of weight behind that line. But I remember then, like, and then you saw, you know, Dragon Ball DBZA would return in season 4. That was like, I think they had a plan. I wasn't sure about the details, but they thought, look, let's just try and wrap up the Boo saga in our own way. But whatever it is, it'll be very different to what we've done before, because you can't really top the Cell saga. But and then eventually, I think it was just burnout, ultimately, which made the final decision to then go back to what we originally intended. So it was just pure fatigue and not wanting to half-ass the BoJack movie and half-ass anything else, because that the fans don't deserve that.
Absolutely. And I'm a big believer in everything that I like, whether it be music, anime, any kind of TV show, that you would rather go out on a high than see something you love get stale and not work anymore.
Yeah, no, definitely. You want to see it go out, you know, like as you remember it, and then have fond memories of it instead of just seeing it kind of splutter to a halt.
Oh yeah. So moving on from DBZA, my last question on that: what do you want if you could put in your own words what you want the legacy of Team Four Star and DBZA to be? What do you want it to be?
In terms of the legacy, I kind of just want it to be there as an interpretation of Dragon Ball. Just an, not the, because there is a legacy for that. It's called Dragon Ball Z. That's what it is. That's what the legacy is of that show. But we are just one interpretation of it. And if people like it, then that's fantastic. But it's not the only one. As we keep saying in every single episode, please support the official release. So,
absolutely.
I just want people to remember, you know, just to remember to keep eating that horse.
Eat that horse. That's one of the best lines in the whole history of the show. So while you were still doing DBZA, you went ahead and started doing the What Ifs on your YouTube channel, which have gone gangbusters for you over the years.
Yes. It all started really basically because I I did this what if about what if the sensu beans didn't exist, and it was like, oh wow, okay, this could actually change a lot of stuff. And then it went to what if Goku never met Bulma, and then what if Piccolo fused earlier. So it was all these different thought experiments, and then the long form one things that started in that traditional sense was the what if Kid Goku went Super Saiyan. That was the first
one
that's done in the style as it is today. But I suppose really myself and Havrock, who writes the scripts with me sometimes, or some of the stories, it's a joint effort. But Havrock and I, we basically want to try and like keep to the Toriyama ethos of the work ethic, just to kind of make it feel like it's genuine to the story. Unless it's an April Fool what if, where you can go completely nuts.
Of course.
But it just allows certain things to actually happen and explore different opportunities if Toriyama got out of the bed differently on one day. Just he decided to do something different. So that's what we tend to do with our stories. And some people might say that, oh, they're a little bit overdramatic for Dragon Ball's sake, but come on, it's a little bit of drama. You want some like action and stuff. You don't want it to be like the same old Dragon Ball Z story again and again and again. You need to have some different things happen.
What I love about those is there are some that you'll throw out there that when I see the title, I'll be like, man, how is that going to work? Like one of the ones that I've seen recently is, you know, what if Bulma trained like Goku? And when I first saw that, I'm like, man, how is that going to work? And then to hear the way that you told the story and the way you worked it in, man, you really made it work.
Well, thank you. But basically, it's all to do with making it slightly different in the sense that you just want to have it in a way that makes sense, because it can make sense. It's like if one day, for example, Bulma was at the little martial arts tournament and was inspired by Goku and Krillin and friends to train. Like, I want to do that too. That seems really cool. But I'm going to do it my own way. Yamcha, train me. And Yamcha actually gets stronger too. So it's all to do with just having that like different spontaneous thought process. Or that one thing. Like, what if Goku defeated Roshi at the first martial arts tournament? Basically, that whole thing with Jackie Chun was a very important lesson for Goku to understand the idea of there'll always be someone stronger than you. But if he never learned that, he would turn into an absolutely arrogant jerk who would then ultimately abandon Earth to be with Raditz. I mean, granted, he's not a bad guy in it, but he's severely arrogant.
He's not the Goku that we have come to know and love and expect from the series.
He's not a bad guy. He's not bad or inherently evil. He's just extremely stubborn and arrogant.
He's much more like his brother.
No. Well, the thing is, though, Raditz is more calculating, quiet, and cowardly. So,
fair.
That's the thing. He's more kind of like cautious and wanting to survive, you know, through, you know, not being punched in the face.
I guess, yeah, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. So, going on to obviously probably probably the biggest one that you had is the What If Raditz Turned Good. I mean, you have a whole spinoff series off of that, Dragon Ball R&R. How did that come about?
Well, I think it all became clear that when in the What If Raditz Turned Good story, I was like getting to the end of Z, and it was like, oh dang, in Super, the kids that I've just introduced, they won't really get to do much. So they, yeah, Raditz just been introduced with Goten and Trunks and all that stuff. But after Dragon Ball Z, as you know in Super, the kids don't really do anything. So I'm thinking, okay, well, how about I put out a poll to people back when poll cards on YouTube were a thing, because they've recently just been decommissioned. But I asked people, would you be interested in seeing a spin-off that involving Round the Kids? And it was 97% yes. So I'm like, okay then, I will get on that. So about 6 months later or so, I came up with Havrock the first couple of episodes of R&R script, and then put out auditions, and we had 2,000 auditions for it. And 600 Raditz.
Did you say 600 Raditz?
600 Raditz.
Jeez. That, man, that is a lot of Raditz.
That is absolutely. And 200 for Ranch, my OC. And that in of itself is the biggest thing I'm most satisfied with, because R&R, the way I see it, is an interim step towards me making my own IDs. Because coming up with an original character to interact with character models that are already established and respected by the fandom, see how it works, will actually introduce people to our writing style. Then in the future, we can then do our own stuff and people are familiar with it. So it's a good halfway house. And out of all of this, and I think this is the thing that I'm really proud of, there was a picture. Somebody bought like a poster of Ranch, of adult Ranch. Basically, everyone's, I'm like, hey, an adult girl, thick, more like brick, like a tank, like 6'1", as tall as Raditz, basically built like a strong brick house. Like, but people are like, oh, wow, she's cool. She gives off that cool, carefree vibe. But this one picture of somebody who bought a poster, basically all the other posters in that room are of male characters from Dragon Ball. And then there's Ranch. And I'm like, that's a big deal. That is a
oh, yeah.
Not only is it a strong female character that is on the wall with all of these male role models, but it's also an OC. That's the thing. So it's a double header, and that is such a big honor. That is, I cannot get over that. Like, we've made a character that people really, really dig, and you know, in the traditional Dragon Ball world. And yes, granted, there are people out there that do say in the first couple of episodes of R&R that Ranch is a bit of a Mary Sue, and I won't deny that, because granted, my writing style at that time was a little bit slipshod. I was starting to figure out the style. So I will hold my hand up and say, yeah, okay. Ranch was a little bit too conveniently strong and knowing everybody. But we made sure to temper that later on in the episode by focusing it around other characters. So yeah, we learned from that, definitely. But it's good to see that Ranch has been really accepted into the fandom.
Oh yeah. Like, dude, there are times that I forget that she's even an OC. Like, she's just so ingrained in the lore for me now that it's just, you know, she's there.
That's weird to hear. It's still weird to hear.
Well, I mean, it comes down to the writing, man. You wrote an amazing character along with Havarok. The partnership you guys have sounds like it's definitely bearing a lot of fruit, and that's amazing.
Oh yeah, no, of course. I mean, I know. One day Hav wants to write the stories for Blizzard, and you know, he's definitely got that vibe. He knows how to craft a good story alongside me, and we like to torture our characters in a way. Not in a bad way, but just kind of, we don't want to make it too easy for them. And there's one that he's kind of spearheaded mostly, is what if Zamasu did nothing wrong? So basically, it's like, what if Zamasu, instead of like destroying those barbarians, those dinosaur people, what if he decided to make them his project and like see what to prove that mortals can be made better? And lo and behold, we've managed to make him have this own, like, following, and then ultimately going up against Rimshi and Zamasu proving himself. So, just that one decision to not kill them, you know, it's definitely something, you know, really, really good.
Absolutely. So, going back to Dragon Ball R&R real quick, first off, I love that you reprised Goku in that. I remember when you were initially doing auditions, I think you had asked if you wanted people to reprise your role as Goku, which, of course, people are going to say yes. My question was, how do you approach Goku in Dragon Ball R&R different than you approach him in DBZA?
Well, again, this was like, I didn't want to just assume that people wanted me back as Goku. I was like, okay, well, I'll at least ask people to see whether they would like me to. And 9 out of 10 people said yes. So I was like, okay, cool. I've got the consensus of people. Fair enough. So I just wanted to make sure. And then it was basically, oh, the difference between that is that the DBZA Goku is like, that's its own thing. Whereas this Goku is pretty much like one I would actually try and do normally. So it's like, just like normal Goku. Just normal Goku, but with my voice, so therefore a slightly different intonation and tone. So something just a bit more normal instead of too madcap. Toned down, taking it down a notch.
So let's go on to starting up on the lookout. that is an amazing podcast that you and Haverock have going on there, man. And honestly, it kind of surprises me that it took so long for you to get on a podcast. It seemed like a natural thing for you.
Oh, well, then this isn't the first time I've tried to do a podcast. Like back in the day with Kaiser Neko and HBI 2K, we did a thing called the Anime Counterpoint. And that was a lot of fun back in 2007. That was a lot of fun to do. I did try to do a couple of ones, podcasts and stuff. It didn't really work out. Then there was a thing I did a couple of years ago called a Dragon Ball Conversation. So instead of going a Dragon Ball discussion, here's a Dragon Ball Conversation. And I did a few episodes of that with like Jax Blay, Geekdom, Megami 33. Those were really fun. With Farman too. So those were really good, but it didn't really get traction as a YouTube video. So I thought, well, okay. Haverock and I, we like to talk like at StayerCon, it's the UK Dragon Ball convention. I was sharing a room with Haverock, and we like spent 3 hours just talking about Dragon Ball theories. So I'm like, well, why don't we just do a podcast where we're talking about stuff that we normally say for a discussion more in depth? Why don't we just do that? So we then started doing Up on the Lookout about a month or two ago, and it's something I really enjoy doing. Like, it's got the proper format, it's got the style, and we can have some good guests on from the community and from the actual show. So that's something I find really, really cool. Like, we got Damon Mills, we got Caitlin Glass, we even got Eric Vale.
Yeah, I just listened to that Eric Vale one yesterday, and he's one of my favorite voice actors. I kind of have a game that I play where it's like, where can I find these voice actors in the anime, just trying to find them and notice them.
Yeah. No, basically, with Eric's interview, it felt very real, like very pragmatic, very like to the point, very matter of fact. And each guest has their own style, and it's really good to see. Like with Damon Mills, it was quite chatty, very chummy, because we sort of knew each other quite well from like in real life and at conventions. Caitlin Glass, that was very open and very like welcoming, because we'd seen each other at conventions quite a bit. But with Eric, it was like I'd only met him a couple of times, but we got on really well. But he's very to the point, and you feel like, okay, that's good, something refreshing, and like, you know, no sugarcoating and stuff. Like, very like, here are the facts, this is what happened, here you go, and then you can take it as it is. So you think that's really good. So in time, I'm learning through meeting different people how people talk and get a good understanding. Because at SayaCon, this UK Dragon Ball convention, they had like 6 different Dragon Ball dub actors, including Chris Rager, Joss Martin, Ian Sinclair, Chuck Huber, and Peter Kwan, Brian Drummond. So we had all them lot. And I remember doing individual panels with them, hosting a compare, and having to like understand what it's like to be a host. Ian Sinclair's one, that was a lot of fun. It's up on YouTube. And it's just like Ian and I were just talking for 30 minutes, like just chatting to ourselves. It's really, you feel like he can, because Ian Sinclair is a Dragon Ball nerd. Like, you can talk him with Dragon Ball, and he's like, oh, this is really good. I have my theories myself. It's like, well, that makes sense since you're weeks, pretty much. But you get to read different people and then just engage it. Like with Peter Kalamis, I did my research. He very much likes a glass of wine. So I'm like, oh, by the way, I live nearby one of England's very few wine estates. I would recommend it to you if you're in the area next time. And that picked up his interest. So you think, always, if you're hosting anything, or if you're asking a question, take an interest into what they do, because people love to talk about themselves. Like with this interview right now, I like talking about myself. And it's that's the thing. In a good interview, take an interest in what they do, outside of what they normally do, throw them for a loop. Throw in a question like, okay, I like talking about this, so I'll talk about this. And then that puts you down a whole other avenue of questions that you wouldn't thought possible. And it really kind of helps the interviewee be relaxed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we're getting an education right now.
Kind of changing it up a little bit. What was your experience doing Helsing?
Oh, Helsing. Oh, yeah. No, that was a lot of fun, because, again, you get to voice different characters that you normally do. So getting to voice Herr Doctor Everyone, it's absolutely but nature. Your brilliance shows no bounds. It's just that you get to like be this eccentric German, and playing off of Lanny's major is really, really fun. And you know, just I got to actually edit one of the episodes, episode 7, which is the one you know, it's the one where the phrase "it's a matter of perspective, really," like when Sarah goes full vampire. Like,
yeah,
just like that moment, just like, say my name! It's just like that. And there's been one thing I've wanted to say to Kaiser. Like, he voiced Pip Bernadotte. And it's like with saying to Sarah, I studied French for 15 years. It's ma chérie, not ma chère. So it's like, oh, I wanted to say that. And it's only like, I didn't say anything. I put up with it. I should have said something, but it was like, okay.
Well, Kaiser, if you're listening to this, there you go.
I think he already knows.
Oh, man. Yeah, that, I really enjoyed the work you did on that character, man. You definitely brought him to life in a way that I wouldn't have expected before.
I just love that final episode, you know. Just like, kind of like, you know, it's like, I know, I'll go to Russia. They let you get away with anything there. As long as not too gay. It's like style of Tarka's writing is a lot of playful fun to it, and the way Tarka is like, okay, you're gonna say it like that, all right, brilliant, good, okay, just do it again, more crazy, nice, good, yeah. It's like very like one word direction.
Yeah, Tarka strikes me as the kind of guy that has a very dry sense of humor. in the best way.
And in a way, and he'll just like either say good or like, yeah, man, nice. All right, cool. All right, nice. Just like, yeah, he either gets jazzed or he's like, yeah, I don't want to like. Good. Awesome.
I definitely have a few people like that in my life. Oh, boy. Well, I think we have gone through just about everything that I have in my notes here. Cody, do you have anything you want to add?
So I do have one question. And I apologize if you've gotten this question. If you could make a wish on the Dragon Balls, would you? And if you would, if you don't mind, what would?
I'm going to be honest, and this one's stolen from Kaiser, and it's a really good wish. I would basically wish for a book, which whatever you would write in it would actually happen.
Oh, that is perfect.
Ooh.
Basically, self-fulfilling book.
I would have never thought of that. That's incredible.
Because it's not technically wishing for more wishes.
Yeah, that's true.
That's brilliant.
Well, before we wrap up with you, sorry if you get this request all the time, but is there any chance I might be able to speak with Goku for a second?
Okay, let me get into character. Okay, I am Goku.
Goku, how are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing very well, Mr. DD. King DD.
Hey, my friends call me Doug. You can call me Doug if you want, my man.
I can Doug it.
So, Goku, there is one question I have been wanting to ask you for years, and I finally get the opportunity. What do you bench?
Well, what have you got? Well, honestly, the thing is, sometimes I bench Chi-Chi, but sometimes she gets really annoyed if I do it too quickly. Like, yeah, you know, up and down, and I've got to be careful where I put my hand. But honestly, though, I tried to, like, bench, like, an oil tanker. So I was, like, going over to Piccolo, and I was like, hey, an oil tanker for you! So, and Piccolo didn't really appreciate that. But, you know, it's one of these days, like, Freezer. That Freezer guy, when he introduced me to General Mountain, I want to find a mountain and bench press that. That seems like awesome. But the thing is, every time I do it, it just keeps breaking apart. When I try to put it back together, then I get bored. You know, vicious cycle, my friend. Vicious bicycle.
Absolutely. How's everything at home? How are your boys doing?
Sorry, what?
How's everything at home? How's your boys doing?
I have boys? Oh, yeah, those guys. Oh, yeah, that's cool. Well, wait. Oh, yeah, because Chi-Chi's pregnant. Yeah, because that little one does look a little like me. Gohan's all right. He's being a bookworm. He's not training as much as I like, but, you know, I'm not there. Not much I can do, really. But I don't think he actually gets the idea. I hear there's a movie, his next movie or whatever it is. He actually wears my key. That's kind of cool. But, yeah, I think they're doing all right. It's kind of cool up here, though. I can't wait to see that Piccolo lookalike. He's really strong, apparently.
Oh, you're talking about PyCon?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that guy. I don't really know. Wait, that's his actual name?
I think so.
Nice.
I mean, I haven't been formally introduced,
Nice. Hey, apparently do you know instant transmission? Is that how it works?
Do I know instant transmission?
Well, you just disappeared and then reappeared. Just kind of
Yeah. Well, if I don't, my phone surely does. I apologize for that.
That's all right. You know, instant transmission is pretty cool and all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see you use it all the time.
Oh, yeah, right? When don't I?
So, Goku, are you familiar with anime? Do you watch any?
Chi-Chi doesn't like us to watch anime. I just find it's a little meta for my liking. But,
oh, is that right?
Yeah, but at the same time, I've seen, like, a thing called Food Wars. I don't know. It's trying to be this interpretation of what people enjoy food. But sometimes they get, like, really kind of, like, loud and, like, what Chi-Chi does sometimes on a Saturday night. It doesn't seem accurate to me, to be honest. It doesn't feel like a valid interpretation about how food is appreciated. So, it's very, very subtle, very nuanced, very sophisticated. The feel of a steak on your tongue is absolutely something you wish to savor. Like, as, you know, sometimes like people might say I wolf down Big Macs like Tic Tacs, but you gotta real savor it, you know? Take it slow. But, you know, you just see this thing, they explode with delight. That's not how it works. I mean, there's an explosion, but that's, you know, if something's gone real bad. But I hope that's not what happened to them. Otherwise, whoa, Mom, I don't feel bad for the toilet.
Oh, man.
So Goku, best dish.
Best dish? All of them. As long as it's not great.
That's the correct answer. All right, Goku, one last question. You versus Superman. Who do you got?
Oh, don't get me started on that one. I'm waiting for round three.
Hey, I'm just saying, you were robbed, man.
Right? I mean, come on. Well, you didn't even give me a chance. I know this Ultra Instinct thing now, or I will do eventually. Apparently the timelines are all mixed up. I want to give it another go.
Absolutely. Goku, any last thoughts for our comic cast listeners?
Well, the old saying goes, if you fall off that horse, you get back up and you eat that horse.
And we will continue to eat that horse every single day. Goku, thank you so much.
You're absolutely welcome.
All right. Well, Lawrence, Masako, before we let you go, why don't we go ahead and plug your socials real quick?
All right, sure. Well, Masako X, you can pretty much find me on Twitter, Instagram, realmasako_X. And you can listen to the podcast Up on the Lookout for more casual podcast dealies. In fact, we're actually doing an interview with the voice of Ranch tomorrow, because actually on July the 10th, that's Ranch's birthday.
Oh.
It's also my mother's birthday.
Awesome. Nice. Well, happy birthday, Dad. So, yeah, July the 10th is in when part 4 of Raditz Turn Good came out. And that's when Ranch was first introduced. So that's technically her birthday.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Well, Lawrence, darn it, Masako, I'm sorry, I keep doing that. Okay. I want to thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a long time coming for us to have you on, and we appreciate it so much.
It's been a huge pleasure.
Thank you for having me, guys.
By the way, we listened to On Snake Way earlier, and it has been stuck in my head. I love that.
Yeah. Now, that's a good one. That was a lot of fun to make.
All right. Well, Masako, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. That was our interview with Masako X. Doug, how do you feel?
feel pretty good, man. I mean, I definitely think we have some room to grow. You know, I definitely think that next time we go into a conversation with him, it'll be a million times better. But for our first time with a guest like that, man, I think it was a pretty fun time.
Absolutely. And he was very gracious. I love that even then he gave us great advice on interviewing people in the future. And I really want to take that to heart. It was great advice.
And he gave us almost an hour of his time, which I was not expecting. I thought we were going to get, you know, maybe 20 minutes and then he'd be like, oh, hey guys, I got to go. But he was very giving with his time. He sat down with us for literally just shy of an hour, and I can't thank him enough for that. Masako, Lawrence, if you're listening to this, thank you so much. You have no idea what this meant to us.
Thank you. It was an absolute blast, and I look forward to hopefully having another conversation with you in the future.
Absolutely. Why don't we go ahead and plug Masako's social one last time for everybody?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, you can find him on Twitter at MasakoX. You can find him on Instagram at RealMasako_X. You can check out his website, which again is MasakoX.com.
And you can find him on YouTube, the MasakoX channel, where all this started. And then you can find his new podcast, Up on the Lookout, which I wish we would have come up with that name.
Yeah, that was, I wish I could have said that to him. I completely forgot, but absolutely. Up on the Lookout is a brilliant podcast name for all things Dragon Ball.
And it's easily my favorite Dragon Ball podcast. And I'm not just kissing ass because he was on the show. If it wasn't my favorite, I wouldn't say so.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a great show. Great interview with him. You can find Up on the Lookout on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, his YouTube channel, or direct through his website. That's the cool thing about MasakoX.com. If you don't know where to find him, just go to MasakoX.com, and it's got links to everything. He's got a Patreon. Make sure you support him there. And I'm going to go ahead and give him one more plug. He did recently release a line of Raunch plushes.
Yeah.
Which we will link to in the description of this episode. Absolutely pick one of those up. Support him. He's just a great guy, man. He deserves every bit of good things that are happening to him. And again, can't thank him enough for doing this. Want to thank you guys so much for listening. Next week, we are going to come back with the beginning of our arc breakdowns for Dragon Ball Z, starting with, of course, the Saiyan arc. Want to thank you guys so much for listening. I've been Doug Keeney.
I'm Cody Taylor.
And as always, support the official release. This is KameCast.